life gets messy. Spills, stains, and kid chaos. But with Anabe, cleaning up is easy. Our sofas are fully machine washable, inside and out, so you never have to stress about messes again. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, that means fewer stains and more peace of mind. Designed for real life, our sofas feature changeable fabric covers, allowing you to refresh your style anytime. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa effortlessly. Perfect for cozy apartments or spacious homes. Plus, they're earth-friendly and built to last. That's why over 200,000 happy customers have made the switch. Get early access to Black Friday pricing right now. Sofas start at just $699. Visit washablesofas.com now and bring home a sofa made for life. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Percolate on a particular mix of odd and inspiring news headlines in Wendy's Coffee House. Newsmakers with a penchant for the unknown, unexplained, and unusual share their experiences with UFOs, ghost encounters, near-death experiences, and more for your own unique blend of Wendy's Coffee House Curious. And now, here's Wendy.
There's so much going on, it's hard to narrow the focus, or at least in my world. And plus, I get inundated with lots of books and lots of authors and lots of invitations and all that, so I have to narrow it down. And the good thing is the go-to is always UFO, right next to Bigfoot. And beyond that, Loch Ness Monster. And, well, you know, fairies and gnomes and elves and oh my. That's why I'm here in Kansas, the land of Oz. The other thing that I want to say is I really appreciate people who know my vices. My husband ordered a shirt for me from Eddie Bauer. Eddie Bauer does have a sense of humor, and I've worked there for a few years. So occasionally it would creep out in their T-shirts. The latest one is Nessie. So yes, I will have that very shortly. Anyway, there's a wonderful book out that I just discovered that has all of the, with Nick Pope talking about a lot of the UFO stuff coming out recently and all the, you know, all the focus now on what's in the archives. I really, really was thrilled to find the book from Four Corners Books, and this is a hardback, and it's the UFO Drawings from the National Archives by David Clark. And what is so nice about this is you see people, the real, you know, concept drawings of what they think they saw with the colors. And if they don't have that, then they have a diagram or an explanation. And then how the Ministry of Defense, how they followed up. And a lot of times they would say, well, this is a local issue, so you'll have to go to them. Or this is a health issue, so you'll, and sometimes, right, there was nowhere to go with that. But one of the fun things in this is the classic picture of the little girl seated in a beautiful pastoral scene, like a park somewhere, and the grass is green. She's got a just adorable. And this is the picture they took in 1964. And Jim Templeton took it of his five-year-old daughter, Elizabeth. And they didn't see anything at the time. But when they had this thing developed, right behind her on the back, just right behind her head, and this is what the Photoshop saw, and they said, that's such a wonderful photograph. But it's rather spoiled by the big man behind her. And there is somebody who looks like it's a figure dressed in white with a helmet of some kind. It looks like an astronaut. I mean, how we would view an astronaut standing behind her in the picture. And so he tried to get, I mean, of course, this was a big deal at that time. And they call it the Solway Spaceman. And the thing about this is that he was also visited by two mysterious men dressed in black suits and bowler hats. They drove away in a brand new Jaguar, and they had asked him where the photograph was taken. And they said that they, like number 27 and number 26, like, you know, K and J. And then they said that they were from the ministry. Now, that wasn't ever followed up on to find out where. And they don't mention it in the files. So the files that the ministry has don't refer to these guys. But over the years, they were unable to figure out whatever came of this, how it happened. And when he died, the dad who took the picture in 2011, he said, it's up to you to draw your own conclusions. I'm sure someone out there knows what it was and where it was from. So that's one of the fantastic little gems that's in this book. And I thought we're going to be talking with this is one of the classic and original 1950s ET UFO kind of the Big Brothers Are Here encounters. And he was incredibly famous at the time. And we're going to go into the background of why with George Adamski. And the reason is because he had a lost novel that has been recovered, hasn't ever been released before. And Gerard Artson has gone back and done the homework on this. And he does a lot of this kind of stuff, so it's not like his first rodeo. But at the same time, we're going to have to refresh everyone into the background, because there were a lot of contactees in the 50s who had encounters with what they described as beings, real people, you know, in the flesh or in the spacesuit. And that was what was so fascinating about that time, that it wasn't just a one thing, it was multiples. Because here we had George Van Tassel, and we had some other very recognizable names. If you go back and look at the, you know, Weekly World News and stuff like that, there they were. So Gerard's on the phone listening to me give this wonderful explanation. Does any of this make sense to you? I mean, you've been covering this for a while.
I've been writing starting with articles since 2008, and my first book. I ventured into attempting my first book late 2009, which came out in 2010. And it was my first book was about George Adamski, in fact. Like you said, it wasn't a novel that I rediscovered. It was his first book of teaching from 1932. George Adamski, of course, is known for his books, Flying Saucers Have Landed, which he co-authored with an Irish author, Desmond Leslie, and even more Inside the Spaceships, about his own experiences and contact with people from space in flying saucers and motherships. And Inside the Spaceships came out in 1955. And those two books are the ones that he's most famous for. And a lot of people knew that he had been involved with some little-known organization, the Royal Order of Tibet, in the 1930s, but not much was known about it other than one publication, Wisdom of the Masters of the Far East. And then last year I came across his very, very first small volume of teachings, The Invisible Ocean.
And that's what you published in the book, and this is the lost debut recovered. It's and in the Sea of Consciousness. And you've also added your information in here as well, and trying to, you know, connect the dots and see how relevant this is even after this long period of time. The stuff that he was talking about is actually, and that's, I think, where we tie into it. What has, because of his teachings and his beliefs and his ideas, has really withheld the test of time?
Well, you know, I think it's important that people know and remember that since the 1950s, George Adamski's story, George Van Tassel's story, Howard Menger's, Buck Nelson's, Truman Bethlehem's, and many of those other early contactees, they had very, very similar experiences and accounts of their experiences in books and lectures, and they generated a massive interest among the public. And the gist of the message that they were told by the contacts from space was, on planet Earth, you have to work together in order to avoid self-destruction, self-annihilation. You know, we have to remember it was in the middle of the Cold War. The United States and the Soviet Union were pitted against each other and in an arms race that we still feel the consequences of in terms of nuclear weapons all over the planet. And if someone goes berserk and presses the wrong button, things could still get completely out of hand as a result of that Cold War in the 1950s. And the arms race, of course, was so very costly and needed so much public money, public funds, that the authorities and the military saw it as a massive problem that these people, and they were the majority were in America, they were Americans, but it happened in many other countries as well, that they were getting so much interest, public interest, in that message of international cooperation. So that's when they started this whole disinformation campaign. And you know, and the result is, of course, people know very well that nowadays the narrative mostly is about abductions and probes and experiments, hybrid breeding, and all those things. And the original story got buried under all that disinformation.
Okay, hold on. We're going to get some, we've got some interference on the line. So we're going to take a quick break and see if we can clear that up and then come back. And if we don't, we'll edit. My guest is Gerard Artson, The Invisible Ocean, George Dansky's Lost Debut Recovered in the Sea of Consciousness. And we'll be talking a little bit more about that Kremlin, that connection, Flying Saucers from the Kremlin. I actually have a new book coming out from Nick Redfern talking about that kind of connection and what they thought it, you know, might be spies and all this going on with the contact experience. It's Wendy's Coffee House on KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. I was talking earlier about the book coming out, Nick Redfern, UFOs, Russian Meddling, Soviet Spies, and Cold War Secrets. And he's talking about the contactees and how that there was some belief, or is still some belief, that maybe there was some, maybe a little bit of meddling behind the scenes, and in some way, shape, or form, dark or black ops reason for these people coming out with certain messages. And that's a little convoluted. And of course, that's we have no idea at this point what really is happening or has happened, because it's been so long. But when he's going and trying to connect the dots and saying this is what they thought and why they wouldn't have been so gung-ho about sharing the messages, because they thought there was an ulterior motive, which would have been communism. Okay. The other person I wanted to mention real quick is Reverend Robert Short. He was another one as a UFO contactee and channel. He went to the Van Tassels, the giant rock area, and then had this encounter, and from then on was convinced that he was bringing messages from extraterrestrial intelligence. He's just one of the many who were influenced. What I think is interesting in talking with Gerard and reading the work here of George Adamski was his spirituality. The thing that was brought through with his earlier works and his studying was that he never lost that, and that was maintained in his work. And the fascinating thing is that as the adults got it there in the 50s, the kids were getting this because they had all these school sightings throughout the 90s. So I think that message continued, and if the adults didn't get it, they were going to get it with the kids. So that's kind of, you know, one of those fascinating things. And one of the movies that's coming out about that, we'll be talking about the 1994 experience, I think, that John Mack went in, studied with the children who saw this. I don't know. They keep changing the date on when it's going to be put out. And I'm trying to remember now. I just blanked on the name. Ariel Phenomena. Yeah, there we go. Gerard, have you ever heard of the kids who have had these experiences, encounters, because they're all over the world, the schools that they've seen these sightings with multiple children?
Well, in my book, Priorities for a Planet in Transition, I have an addendum to my first chapter, and in it I give a rather random overview of sightings by children at schools, one in Africa, South Africa?
Yeah,
no, Zimbabwe, I believe, in 1994, and several other sightings by kids. One was in Australia, a very famous one in the 1960s, mm-hmm. Westall. And the kids there were told, you didn't see anything and you're not supposed to talk about it.
Right. They'll think we're nuts.
Yeah. So yes, it's well known that kids have been having sightings all over the world. Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting, actually, that you mentioned the spirituality aspect of George Adamski's information, and actually the same goes for many of his fellow contactees from the 1950s, and many people after them, because his the booklet that I uncovered, The Invisible Ocean, and which I republished in my book The Sea of Consciousness just last April, shows that his teaching was actually consistent throughout his life. And because when we talk about spirituality, we're talking about the evolution of consciousness. Spirituality is about expanding, growing our consciousness to include more and more of life and the world around us until it includes the other, so that we understand their needs and, you know, and we can learn to live together and cooperate for the general good. And The Invisible Ocean, Adamski's first booklet, shows in the most beautiful and the simplest terms how we could picture this as an ocean with different strata of different levels of atmospheric pressure. And, you know, the creatures at the lower strata, you know, they're bound to their own area, and as you progress on into the higher strata of consciousness, you become freer and freer, and you can move around from top to bottom, so to speak. And it is such a appealing vignette, so to speak, symbolic representation of what is now confirmed by systems science. Systems science is a relatively new discipline in science, where they bring together the latest insights from many different scientific disciplines, including astronomy, biology, you know, you name it, quantum physics, and the latest findings, which I use to put Adamski's earliest teaching in context, are almost literally, but then in scientific terms and based on scientific findings, what Adamski wrote in his first booklet. So it's really interesting, and also interesting to see how that played throughout his life. It is in harmony with the messages that he got from his space contacts. And it is certainly in line with his later philosophical treatises after he sort of stepped out of the flying saucer area in his writings and focused on, you know, teaching again the way he started his career as a teacher.
When you write the book, and I'm going to go into page 56, and we were talking, that's where you're talking about the physical oceans and the between the floor of the oceans, strata, the different vibrations, but goes into Irvin Laszlo and talking about the documentary, the PBS documentary from his books, The Intelligence of the Cosmos and What is Reality, then this is the system science that you're referring to.
Yes, exactly, yes.
Well, that part of it, you know, when they're talking about that and really laying it out specifically, and his beliefs, his descriptions are married to that for the most part. Then they go into some, and you're talking about when he's being asked if the space people are spirits. And no, he says, no, they're not. And but I think that's what people have a tough time understanding when they haven't experienced it, that somebody could actually have an encounter.
Hmm. Yes, and it requires a little knowledge that has been esoteric until fairly recently. But if we imagine that the molecules, the H2O molecules in water, that they vibrate at a slower rate when water freezes over and it becomes solid and you can walk on it or hold ice skating competitions on it. And in water, they are vibrating at their regular rate of vibration, and it's liquid. And when we cook it, then it becomes vapor because the molecules are moving even faster.
Mm-hmm.
And in the same vein, subatomic particles, and I also read this actually in Irvin Laszlo's work, and you know, in other avant-garde scientific experiments, apparently subatomic particles vibrate at higher levels, at higher rates of vibration beyond our visible range.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't, what we know as physical reality and therefore call reality, and we have a difficult time imagining that there's more beyond what we can see. But that is apparently where life plays out for the most part. If we remember that science itself says it cannot account for 96% of the universe. based on calculations of the estimated mass of the universe. 96% cannot be pinpointed, it cannot be found. So, there's every reason to believe that there's higher planes of existence that fall outside our range of vision. Just as light and sounds are all exist in frequencies that our ears and our eyes cannot register.
Okay, we're going to continue when we come after the break. The fireflies mentioned by John Glenn, and then the radiation surrounding the Earth, the Van Allen belts. How does that factor in with the contact experience of George Adamski? Okay, my guest, Gerard Artson, The Invisible Ocean, George Adamski's Lost debut novel, Recovered, actually debut writing, I should say, and In the Sea of Consciousness, which goes along with that, talking about we're more than just the body. And the OBE people and NDE people can say, yes, that's absolutely correct. I'm going to talk about a little bit more. Experiences beyond the body. KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House. Wendy's Coffee House. KCMO Talk Radio. One of the earliest contactees, really famous contactees, George Adamski. And, you know, you can Google all you want, and there's all tons of information out there. But I wanted to go back in part of the book that Gerard's prepared with In the Sea of Consciousness, which is part of his book. He includes that Invisible Ocean, George Adamski's Lost debut. The fact that when this was happening, people were saying, well, this is fiction, it's a dream, it isn't real, it's just an out-of-body thing. But the amazing thing that we know from like William Buhlmann and some of the guys who are doing this out-of-body research, OBEs, and Joe McMonagle, you know, they tell you, they teach you how to do it, that this stuff, just because you don't have the body with you doesn't mean you can't get information and access it. So one of the things that I really appreciate Gerard for including in this is the stuff that kind of validated some of George Adamski's experiences, and that's why I mentioned the Van Allen belts and the fireflies in space. Can you refer to that?
Yes, these are references that are well known, and especially Desmond Leslie, in a commentary about George Adamski, mentions these things as indications that what Adamski wrote, you know, long before we had astronauts up in space. Adamski described things like the bands of radiation, which we now know as the Van Allen belts, and the fireflies in space that astronauts say they witness. And what I admire so much about Desmond Leslie, Adamski's co-author of his first book about UFOs, is that he understands the spiritual aspect of the UFO phenomenon. He even writes in his commentary that they may have been, or some of Adamski's experiences may have been out of body experiences, it doesn't make it any less true. He says it is the consciousness and not the body that is the self. And that is exactly the thing that modern humanity, modern men and women, that we in modern science find so difficult to wrap our heads around. And that is the crucial thing in properly understanding the UFO phenomenon, because so many people focus on the nuts and bolts. You know, if I don't have a piece of metal to touch, or if I don't see a disc for myself, then I can't believe it.
Right.
That's fair enough. But that doesn't mean that people didn't experience the things that they experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And the question you asked me earlier about the states of being out of our physical reality, everything that we see, according to the wisdom teachings, the esoteric knowledge that we find all over the world in all kinds of ancient traditions, according to the wisdom traditions, everything that we see is the dense physical precipitation of blueprints on one or other of the what are called the etheric planes of matter, where, as I said, the subatomic particles vibrate at higher frequencies on each subsequent level. So it is about broadening our understanding of reality and our broadening our vision in order to to understand that Adamski and Van Tassel and many of their fellow contactees claim that their contacts were from the other planets in our solar system. When I say this out loud, many people, UFO researchers especially, who claim to be objective and who say they need, you know, hard evidence, or we need hard evidence in order to substantiate any claim, they laugh at me because, you know, science has proven that life is not possible there. But what we're talking about then is dense physical life in dense physical forms, carbon-based.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But life expresses itself as waves of consciousness that go through an evolution, the cycles of evolution. And on Earth, it has precipitated to a very dense physical level, but that doesn't mean that it has to do that in the rest of the universe, and apparently it hasn't, because we haven't, even though science believes that there must be life there, we haven't found anything yet, at least not carbon-based. But doesn't mean there's no life.
Right.
You know, it doesn't mean evolution or no consciousness is going on. Quite the contrary, as you know, the latest insights from system science shows now. And I would really recommend people who are interested in this to read Professor Laszlo's book, The Intelligence of the Cosmos. It's so such an eye-opener.
Well, and you include a lot of information in here. I like the one from the contactee, Howard Menger, who told, this is from his contacts from space, "Nothing we see with our physical eyes is truth, but simply a reality in the dimension of a reflection or an effect secondary in nature related to a cause from a primary source." And I think that's really right, spot on. It just, we see it, but it's
exactly
our level of understanding that determines what it is for us.
Yes, and in how far we are open to accepting that reality may be larger, broader than what we can see or hear with our physical senses.
So you've also been working with Share International, and
yes,
this is with Benjamin Krim.
Indeed, yes. That's where I started my journey as a student of the Western teachings. The interesting thing is I ventured into research of the contactees once I found out that George Adamski's early book was titled, before he started writing about flying saucers, was called Wisdom of the Masters of the Far East. And there I saw a direct connection. And it turned out that Adamski apparently was sent to Tibet as a teenager and studied with the Masters of the Far East, who are, so to speak, the inhabitants of the kingdom in nature, which is next up from the human kingdom in nature. Remember, we're talking about the evolution of consciousness,
mm-hmm,
which doesn't stop with the human kingdom. If we look back into history, we see, you know, great artists, composers, scientists, philosophers, teachers like Buddha and Krishna and Christ and many, many others, who apparently have a grasp of reality which is broader, bigger than that of most of us. And they show us the way. They show us the way to the beauty, to the good, and to the true. So, you know, they are the way pointers and the people who paved the way for the rest of us in terms of growing and evolving our consciousness.
Yeah.
And Benjamin Krem, who you mentioned, is the latest exponent, as far as I'm concerned, in the reintroduction of the wisdom teachings into the modern world, which started with Madame Blavatsky in the late 19th century. And according to Benjamin Krem, or a large number of those who make up the spiritual kingdom on this planet have or are in the process of returning into the physical aspect of our lives so that they will be known once again. They've never left this planet, but they have been living for the past 100,000 years, more or less, in the remote mountain and desert areas. And you know, have given humanity the opportunity to find our way and develop in a way that would not have otherwise been possible. And they are now going to show us what life is really about. You know, that it's not about competition and making the most money and beating others. It's about cooperating and striving towards unity for the best of, you know, the good of all. And that is, very often people get skeptical or scared even, because they're confusing unity with uniformity.
Yes.
Unity can only be real when it's based on diversity and every individual contributing their unique talents to the whole. Otherwise, there's no point in unity. You know, it will be just a gray mass.
Mm-hmm.
Uniformity goes against the natural order, because if you look around in nature, if you look around, you know, just look around your family, and everybody, when you have children and you look at your children, each of them has their own unique personality and talents, even though they come from the same parents.
Okay, hold
on. The same is true for nature.
Hold on. We're going to have to take a break. We're going to come right back, and we'll talk about that. And then the other factor is the UFOs around the planet. Okay. All right. So stick around. It's Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio.
What is the explanation? Who knows?
Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Thanks for tuning in. I appreciate your time. If you miss any of the information on the show, I'm going to be putting links on the blog, Wendy's Coffee House, just so you can follow along, catch up, or do your own research and dive in. Because once you open this little potato chip thing, you're going to at least want 2 or 3 more bags. It's just not one. Because it's fascinating, and it comes from all different directions. And so Gerard Artinson also does presentations, and you can check out his website, vgapublications.nl, and that'll give you some more information about his background. He does focus on consciousness and what this is about and how this is helpful in expanding our awareness and kind of upgrading our intelligence, saying there's more here than just the physical. And you were talking before we went on the break about the mistake and the fear that unity means uniformity. And I think that's absolutely correct. That's what people are like. They're stuck with that. That's not true.
Mm-hmm. And that's why they're so afraid to reach out and cooperate internationally. You know, we've seen that since the end of the Second World War. And the Second World War was actually about preventing uniformity to be imposed on humanity through the Nazi ideology. So unity is nothing to do with uniformity. It's about cooperating, all of us, from whatever race, from whatever political background, from whatever religion, to make this the richest possible international community. So that is exactly the same message that the contactees were given by their space contacts.
And you have a couple of books as well, all right? That's it. We're talking all about George. And
mm-hmm.
but you're the one here talking, and you're the one doing all the work right now. So let's give yourself a pat on the back.
Well, yeah, my first book was about George Adamski,
uh-huh.
And I was trying to set the record straight in that book by looking at what he actually said. I mean, a lot has been said about him, and most of that were, you know, refried half-truths and lies and all those things. So I went to his material, his books and lectures, and tried to piece together what he'd actually been saying. My second book took a broader look at other contactees as well, and making connections with much more recent contactees and sightings and developments. And it's called Here to Help, UFOs and the Space Brothers. And it focuses, or actually it shows how the message from the original contactees reverberated across the planet, and you know, it happened in Italy, it happened in Europe, in so many places around the world. It wasn't a strictly American affair,
mm-hmm.
or a 1950s affair. And it actually, when you look at the message, it points to such a hopeful future for mankind if we manage to make the right choice when we come to that point where we have to make a decision. Are we going to fight each other to the death, or are we going to, reach out to the other, whoever that may be, to try and cooperate and create justice and freedom in this world for everyone, not just for the rich and you know, those who can afford it, but for everyone, so that everyone can live in true freedom. You know, everybody talks about freedom, but nobody realizes that true freedom starts with freedom from fear and freedom from want.
Well,
you know,
we go.
If you're hungry, then you know what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You're going to find food. That's the first thing everybody needs.
Survival.
And there's survival, exactly. So that's my second book. And my third book zooms in on that aspect even more, Priorities for a Planet in Transition. And there I bring together, from mostly the original accounts of the 1950s contactees, enormous similarities in the accounts about descriptions of life on other worlds and how that would be possible here. And, you know, I point to some experiments that have been going on our world. And again, a very, very hopeful message emerges. Priorities for a Planet in Transition, yes. And my fourth booklet, it's in print, but it's also free to download from my website, Before Disclosure,
mm-hmm.
Dispelling the Fog of Speculation. And there it has three essays, more or less, and they are intended to help readers to see how infectious the disinformation campaign has been, to the point where we now hear about communist interference with or meddling with the messages from the contactees.
Yes, yeah.
You know, everything is done to discredit these original contact stories. It's amazing how effective that campaign has been. And in those three essays in Before Disclosure, I hope to give readers some tools to come to their own conclusions rather than rely on hearsay or disinformation.
Well, one of the showstoppers when you do your YouTube videos is the four UFOs around the planet. What is the purpose?
Well, these are four UFOs that have been specifically designed to alert our attention, humanity's attention, to the fact that the teachers for the new age, new cosmic cycle of Aquarius, are returning into our everyday lives. That will signal the situation where we will have to make that conscious decision of how to move forward into the future, competing with the risk of self, increasing conflict and self-annihilation, or cooperating for the good of all and the progress, the safe progress of our planet. And these giant UFOs have been stationed around the planet in preparation for this historic momentous event.
Is there a deadline?
No, there's not a deadline, but when we see our systems crashing financially and economically, which more and more experts are expecting any time now, that will be the time. Then we will be on the threshold of these teachers and the master of all the masters that we know as the Christ or the Buddha or the new avatar will be on the verge of making himself known to the world and inspiring humanity to make the right choice.
Okay, Gerard, that's a good cliffhanger. We got to go. All right, so I'm going to put a link to your site, and we're good. And that was the last one we were talking about was Priorities for a Planet in Transition. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. And thank you for sharing the information and for doing your research. And don't stop now, because we're in the thick of things, and this is when it's getting very interesting.
Exactly, yes.
My guest, Gerard Artsen, and it's AARTSEN. Okay, so if you're looking it up in your Google, you can get the right one. George Adamski, fascinating, fascinating experience, fascinating information with all of the contactees. I'm like, wow, you want to go back and look at more of their stuff. And when I found that little hardcover book, the UFO drawings from the National Archives, one of the pictures in there was from somebody who went to a trip on another planet and said, this is how they live. This is what it looks like. This is real. Well, I guess we'll just have to wait another day and see how real it is. It's going to land on our doorstep eventually. Darn, no deadline? Keep hope alive. Hey, thanks for listening. It's Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Stay curious and look up. See ya.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.